and welcome and good morning to this Friday Open Line. I am your host, Brian Bowes, and hopefully Friday morning finds the majority of the county at least maybe sort of dug out the last couple of days of snow and weather we've been having. We've got a couple of segments to bring you this morning. Later on in the hour, we'll be visiting with some folks to discuss the upcoming Okanagan school bond. But first, we are joined via the phone lines with some folks to talk about the Salvation Army update. Good morning, Mr. Hellier.
Good morning, Brian. How are you today?
Doing fine. How are you, sir?
Pretty well. I understand where I'll be in a little bit, but, you know, we wanted to take the opportunity. We really thank KOMW for giving us the opportunity to thank the community at large for supporting the recent Salvation Army bell ringing fund drive, and not only by giving, but also the volunteers who spent many long cold hours out there in the wind ringing that bell and praising God that they could do it in order to raise funds and assist folks in our community. And I wanted the chance to explain to listeners a little bit exactly how all that works. You know, we used to tell folks that they could be assured that over 90% of the funds that are collected during that bell ringing campaign stay in our local community. Today, I can tell you that over and above, over 100% of what's collected, every dime that's collected, stays in our community. Most of it is used to assist people in emergency situations through Manfisher Ministries. There's also the Free Methodist Church in Tenasket handles needs in the county that are from Kronbacher North, but we handle the local needs down towards between Riverside and Malott and the Omak Okanagan area. And I just wanted to report to folks, we don't talk about numbers so much because it sounds too much like patting ourselves on the back, but really we're patting the community on the back. In 2016, Manfisher was able to disperse just shy of $9,000 to members of our community. And that went to 111 different families. Most of it went to keep utilities from being turned off or used for eviction abatement to help negotiate with landlords and help with funding to keep people from being evicted. But also, it's been used for fuel and propane or for miscellaneous needs if somebody is indigent and can't afford specific medicine they need or something like that. And that's all because the local community gives, and because the Salvation Army is caring and takes care of us, and it works really well.
So then, the Salvation Army, the bell ringers, then, if I understand this correctly, all that money that is collected through the generous donations of so many folks, then that gets distributed through Manfisher's and through Free Methodist Church in Tenasca, is that correct?
Yeah, and there may be, and some of that funding can also be used to send local kids to Salvation Army camp.
Oh, okay.
That's happened in the past. But it's really great. You know, the numbers I just mentioned, they don't reflect all the benevolence that Manfisher does. It's about a quarter of our budget that we use for helping folks, but it's a very important piece of it. And, you know, we work hand in hand with the Salvation Army because our primary goal is the same between Manfisher and the Salvation Army, and that's spreading the gospel of salvation through faith and the atoning work of Christ. You know, we labor for the same King Jesus to further the same kingdom of heaven. And the gospel is preached powerfully through these deeds of love and mercy that we're enabled to do because of the generosity of the community and the help of Salvation Army. It's a really good fit for it. Because we labor in the same field and because Manfisher is supported so well by the local church in the Okanagan Valley, and we can administer those funds. We can disperse the funds through vouchers at no cost to the Salvation Army or to the client. And so unlike funds that go through some other agency, not a penny is taken out for that. The other thing that is really interesting is that the Salvation Army has regularly increased our budgets and the money that we're able to disperse over the last 5 or 6 years that we've been working with them. And each time that budget increases, the giving of the local community increases to cover that. Just recently, this last fall, our budget was increased by probably about 50%. And the giving this last season, I don't have all those numbers right in front of me, but we set a goal that was about 25% greater than we did in 2015, and that goal was exceeded by another 25%. And so the community's been so generous, and all that money can go straight to help people, because the bell ringers are all volunteers, the folks who administer the funds down at Manfish are all volunteers, and so nothing has to go off to use anything else. I think the bottom line that people need to understand is that they put $5 or $10 in that red bucket in front of Walmart or Safeway this last winter, every penny of that will go to directly benefit people who are in need in our community. There are other funds that take place that take care of things north of us and south of us and other places in the state and the nation. But every penny that was put in a local bucket will be used for local needs. I think that's remarkable.
Well, I think it's very remarkable, and almost in some cases rare in this day and age that charitable organizations are able and willing to do that. And I think when the community knows and understands the fact that for every dollar in, a dollar goes out to help those who are in their community, I think you're right. I think it definitely does up the desire to give and to help out the community.
You know, and if folks if folks send a check in, I mean, the bell ringing drive is the big fundraiser of the year for the Salvation Army. But some folks support the Salvation Army other times of the year. And if you send a check in to the local Salvation Army office and note on it that it's from and for the OMAC community, it will go right there. And if anybody needs the address for the local state office for the Salvation Army, we can provide that at Manfisher. One of the other things in light of that, that I've noticed about the Salvation Army, I've worked with for more than one national disaster recovery agency. And one thing nice about the Salvation Army is they are administratively very lean. Our immediate overseer, director, Janice Kokiart, works out of Hayden Lake, Idaho. And her service territory is the small communities of eastern Washington, northern Idaho, and western Montana. So she covers a lot of ground. And yet, anytime we have a question or we want to color outside the lines a little bit, help somebody that doesn't particularly fit the parameters, she is right there on the phone with to answer a question. And she spends time meeting with people in OMAC to make sure the bell ringing goes well, to make sure the needs are met, and to counsel and give guidance. And like I say, their management is pretty lean in the Salvation Army. Unlike some agencies, they just aren't quite so lean. But the Salvation Army's managed to keep it that way. And the other thing is they love working with us because it really is about the gospel of Christ for them. They're a Christian organization. Many people forget that, but all the good works that they do, they forget that they're primarily about putting forth the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I think, I'm gonna paint with a real broad brush here, but I think that you find that with most faith-based charitable organizations that they do run, as you say, they run rather lean with their overhead and such, and I think that makes a big difference for their ability to collect funds to help and to assist with their ministries and with the organizations and the things that they're involved with. Dave, quick question. When and how did this partnership begin?
Well, the Salvation Army had been working with another local agency in the past, and they were looking for a better fit, and they discovered Van Fisher Ministries. I'm thinking it's about 6 years ago.
Okay.
And so they approached us, and we quickly found that we were right on the same page with helping people.
Sure.
I love the fact when I talked to my manager, Janice, what she tells me is, if there's a doubt, take care of the needs. You know? I love that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not let's find an excuse as why we can save our money and use it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And back to the idea about faith-based organizations being lean, Brian, that has everything to do with a boss. If you're wasteful or you squander or you're not careful, the Lord Jesus himself will convict you and straighten you out.
Well, it's a little interesting term we like to band our bell called good stewardship. And good stewardship has to do with than just stewardship of the land. It has to do with the stewardship of our time, talents, and treasures that the Lord has already...
Exactly.
That the Lord has already given us, and we're just... We are so generous to give it back to him and in ways to help others. So that's all we're doing, in essence, is giving back what he's already given to us.
Exactly. And Brian, while I'm at it, there's a few other people that I wanted to thank real quick. You know, people all the way up and down the line. Of course, we want to thank the community for their generosity and giving. And Roy and the other leaders and the volunteers who did so much hard work. That's a short season, just a month between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I think they primarily covered about 3 days a week for the most part. And yet that's a lot of hours when you're in the cold. And I talked to one friend who spent a lot of time out there, and he when it gets cold enough, he can't say Merry Christmas anymore. He has to get a break to warm up. But there's those, and of course Janice I mentioned. I also want to thank the volunteers at Van Fisher. We have 3 or 4 volunteers who work primarily with it, and they do a wonderful job. It's difficult to sort out needs with limited resources and make sure that the needs are real and verified and that we're doing the best to help people. And that help always doesn't come just in the form of a check. We also counsel folks in their situation, and everybody gets prayed for because we just don't think there's any good answers without Jesus. And then the other folks I really want to thank are the vendors in our community. You know, we couldn't use our voucher program. The way it works, we don't at the ministry handle any cash at all. We have a voucher book. It's like a checkbook. And we write those vouchers, and the Salvation Army covers it with the budget that they give us. But if we didn't have local vendors who would take those vouchers and then attach a receipt to them and mail them off and wait 4 weeks for their money, then the program wouldn't work.
Right.
Most of the big box stores can't do that because of their internal regulations. But the local vendors, K Hardware, is the most recent one on our team. The local Chevron, a couple of the local motels, and the Okanagan Valley Pharmacy, and several others are Jeans Foods, all places where we can write a voucher, and those folks will take the extra time because it's their heart to help people as well.
Sure.
And that's a really neat thing that local businesses and landlords, individual landlords, many of them work with us to receive those funds.
Yeah.
And so that works really well.
And, you know, and nothing, and this is just coming from me personally now, nothing against any of those, you know, the box stores. They have the regulations that they have to adhere to.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And they're employing a lot of local people, and they're involved in a lot of local events and charities and things like that. But there are just some things that the big box stores cannot do because of the way they're run and regulated, that the smaller, you know, the mom and pop, the local stores can do. And yet that's just another reason why we need to make sure that, yeah, there are times when we need to go to that big box store, but boy, if at all possible, we need to make sure we're supporting our local businesses that help to support
exactly.
our people here in our community.
So. That's right, because they're intimately connected with us, and those have been the businesses that have been providing for needs and serving the community for generations.
Yeah.
Do I have about five more minutes to talk
about?
Yes,
you do. Yeah.
Okay. I was going to mention that this whole program in helping people with the Salvation Army funds fits into the overall picture of addressing the big issue of homelessness in our community, which is truly on my heart. But it is kind of a big picture, and I'd like to explain how this fits in. You know, prevention of homelessness takes place primarily in the home by parents and teachers and pastors that teach the principles and ethics that help a person succeed and be responsible in their life. You know, many people, most of us through our life, will be faced with disasters completely out of our control that could result in homelessness. But the skill in dealing with crisis can keep them from being chronically homeless. Churches and pastors help teach these values to adults as well, who are changing their lives, and provide the counsel that keeps families together. Brian, as you well know, the dissolution of families is one of the great factors in the imminent causes of homelessness. In this day and age, when a household is depending on two incomes to make it, and in a dissolution, a separation takes place, all of a sudden that same income is trying to support two homes. And that, in this day and age, results often in one or the other or both unable to find adequate housing. Other agencies, so there's various steps in addressing the homeless issue, but it starts with adequate teaching and encouragement of people to live the way they ought to and to deal with crisis when it comes up. Usually the causes of homelessness in the short term are bumps in the road. And if we're prepared to meet those bumps mentally and hopefully a little bit financially, then we can deal with that. Other agencies focus on assisting people who are physically or mentally disabled or work with those in recovery from alcohol or drug abuse. Don't forget that these agencies and your everyday pastor are on the front line of dealing with homelessness, preventing it, even though they're not manning the shelters. They aren't visible. They're the ones that are really addressing these issues. When it comes down to the wire, eviction abatements and utility assistance as needed by families, churches, and local agencies such as Community Action and the Housing Authority offer, they provide the relief that many need to get over that bump. And of course, that's where Manfish and Salvation Army funds come in, is when we can keep somebody's lights on in February, well, then it keeps their home habitable, and they don't have to have another place to stay. Many causes, there's many other causes. It's obviously easier to keep your head above water in a healthy economy with good employment and affordable housing. And there's many forces in the community that are working to keep those things in place. But, of course, my take, and the take of many, is that the most important thing in dealing with any crisis in our life is that relationship with God the Father. Because He knows what tomorrow's going to bring us. and he often prepares us ahead of time. I talked with a lady a few weeks ago. She had been renting her place up in the North County for many, many years, was secure in her income and in her situation. And one day she felt clearly that God told her to pack her stuff. And she said, why would I do that? I'm fine. But he was insistent, and she was obedient, so she started putting her stuff in boxes. The story, as I received it, was that that the owner of the property that she was renting from, unknown to her, sold it kind of out from under her, and then gave her a reasonable time to move, but she didn't realize how tough the housing market is.
Yeah.
And so she wasn't able to find something. So she ended up homeless. But the fact that God had prepared her for that, and the folks who go walk with God are regularly reminded that we're never really completely at home down here. We are citizens of a higher country.
Yeah. Well, Dave, there's a couple of things I want to close with, and one, I really appreciate the stuff that you and others are doing with the homeless situation, but I also appreciate how you do acknowledge that at least in some small cases there are those people who are homeless who choose to be that way because of whatever, for whatever reason, but the majority of those people are there because of situations that just happened, they're out of their control, and
that's
now,
right.
Now they need our help. And so it reminds me of like to paraphrase the Hebrews passage, that basically, you know, if we're in that race, and if one of our competitors or one of our brothers and sisters stumble, we aren't to leave them in the dust. We're to go back and walk alongside them and support them and help them finish and help them get back on the path.
Which
then begs the question, who is our brother and sister? Well, it's anybody that we come in contact with in our community. And so it takes everybody to walk alongside, to lift up, to exhort, and to educate, and to help along instead of, you know, with that path.
You know, I'd just like to mention, in light of that, every year they do appointed time count of homeless in different communities to try to allocate state funds equitably. You know, if you're in King County and you want to find out who's homeless, you go down to the local homeless shelter and you count those. In Okanagan County, I have to tell you, the huge number of homeless people are hidden. Because we're in a small community where friends and neighbors and family take people in, and they don't even consider it as dealing. They don't think that they're dealing with a homeless person. They're helping a friend.
Right.
They're helping a brother. And I love that about small communities. And we need to support. You know, if we know somebody who is opening their house to somebody who's homeless. Realize that if we have a chance to take over a meal or encourage some other way or help the person who's in need, look for a job or fill out forms, that's a way that we can just pitch in.
Yeah.
And that's how these problems are best solved. I have to say that they're not best solved by the federal government and government funding. They're best solved by communities, the people who live together, caring for one another, and that's so important.
Dave, I want to thank you for your time today and for this wonderful update. I'm just sorry that Mr. Abshire couldn't join us today, but maybe another time, because I'm going to give a segue for an upcoming program, perhaps. I think people in our community would be shocked at how many in the homeless population are actually school-aged kids.
Oh, yes.
So that'll be for another, hopefully another discussion. So, Dave Hillier, thanks so much.
Brian, I will tell you, the first person to contact regarding that is Julia O'Connor.
Right.
She's been the best, most vocal advocate for that.
Absolutely.
Particular situation.
Well, Dave, thank you very much, and Lord's continuous blessing on all that you do with Matt Fisher's and everything else in that community.
Okay, well, thank you, Brian, for the opportunity.
Yeah,
we'll talk to you later.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Patrick was way behind on his IRS taxes.
I was in way over my head. The total amount ended up being somewhere just over $30,000. $30,000.
Then the IRS came to collect.
Started getting letter after letter. A lien had been filed against me. They were going to basically, like, hang me completely out to dry.
He had to do something.
That's when I reached out to Optima Tax Relief.
Patrick's life quickly got a lot easier.
It was very easy. Pretty much hands off, you know. They picked up the ball and ran with it.
And how'd it go?
I couldn't believe it. I had to ask like two or three times. I saved an incredible amount of money.
How does Patrick feel about Optima?
Couldn't be happier. They definitely helped me. Optima Tax Relief, the best place to call. They're the best in the business.
Do what Patrick did and call Optima Tax Relief for a free consultation. Call 800-936-9033. 800-936-9033. 800-936-9033.
Optima Tax Relief.
It's dinner time. Theoretically, you could go home and prepare an amazing meal. Then, it's hypothetically possible a handsome masseur will appear, just to rub your shoulders while you mince and chop. But realistically, that won't happen. Because you're not going to cook dinner. A more plausible scenario is pulling into Taco Bell for a dinner you can't get anywhere else. Like the new double stack tacos with two amazing flavors in one taco, like spicy sweet for just a buck. Technically here, for a limited time. At participating locations, prices may vary, tax extra.
If you are behind on your bills, then this message is for you. How would you like to have a large portion of your credit card debt or medical bills forgiven? National Credit Card Relief would like to give you free information on a proven debt forgiveness program. It's not bankruptcy. It's not consolidation. This special program actually wipes clean the portion of your debt that is forgiven. Call for your free forgiveness information now. 800-291-6670. That's 800-291-6670. Don't wait. Call 800-291-6670. Not available in North Dakota.
It's pouring rain. It's real dark outside. Your heart starts beating really, really fast. You've never done anything so hard in your life. This is boot camp. This is the real thing now. It's such extreme pain. You don't understand how you can finish. I began to feel that there was no way I was ever going to have my title, U.S. Marine. It takes special inner strength, courage, and desire to do this. I was just thinking, I'm so close. I'm so close. And when I finished, I was like, I'm done. I did it. The moment I will never forget is when this drill instructor that I admire so much comes up to me straight in front of me, put her arm on my shoulder and said, good morning, Marine.
EFC Summer Volkman became a Marine. Can you? Visit Marines.com or call 1-800-MARINES. The few, the proud, the Marines.
And welcome back to our Friday Open Line. I am your host, Brian Bowes. Just got done talking with Dave Hellyer about the tremendous effort that the Salvation Army did with the and the Man Fisher's crew and company with the this last season's bell ringing campaign and all that the Salvation Army does to help our community, along with Matt Fisher's in here in this central part of the county and the Free Methodist Church in Tenasca in the north part of the county. Now we're visiting with Dr. Richard Johnson from Okanagan School, the superintendent, to talk about the upcoming bond levy.
You bet. Thank
you. Good morning.
You.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Well, educate me.
Okay. I'll be happy to.
All right.
I'll try to anyway.
Okay.
Well, it started, the journey did about 3 years ago, when the Okanagan School Board formed a committee made up of parents, staff, and some business people to look at and to identify the buildings and grounds needs of the district. And so they looked at that for about a year, and then they came back and reported to the board. And then the school board turned around and formed a second committee made up also of staff, parents, and business people to look at the sports fields, sports/PE fields, which they did, and that took them about a year or two, and then they reported back. And then from there, the board decided to run a bond levy, which they did last spring in April. And even though it received a majority of the vote, it didn't receive a supermajority. Supermajority in the state of Washington is 60% or more have to vote yes. So the board wanted to find out why. Why didn't it pass? Why didn't we get to 60%? And so they held two public workshops where people were invited, patrons were, to come in and to say not only why they didn't vote yes, why they thought it didn't pass, but also what needed to be done different the next time around. And then the board conducted a survey of also the patrons of the district. So from all of that, six things developed that people felt that why it didn't pass. Number one, they said, you ran it in April, and that's not a good month for Okanagan. We always pass levies in February, and April is tax month. And don't make that mistake again. That was pretty high on their list. The other thing was the artificial turf. They felt that the football field for artificial turf was unnecessary, that it should be replaced, all right, the sawgrass, but replace it also with sawgrass again. The total cost of the bond levy they felt was too high at $6.5 million. They felt the tax rate was too high at $1.35 a thousand. And they felt that too much money was designated for sports. And finally, they felt that not enough money was designated for non-sports.
Okay.
And so consequently, then the school board made the following changes to this bond levy proposal. The bond levy election will be conducted in February 14th. It will be a new grass sod field for the football field is what's proposed. The total dollar amount of the bond levy would be reduced by about $2.5 million. The tax rate would be reduced by 42 cents from $1.35 to 93 cents a thousand. The total dollar amount spent on sports is reduced by about $3.2 million. And the total dollar amount spent on non-sports will be increased by about $650,000. And so the Okanagan School Board is hoping that these changes will reflect the will of the voters and yet still meet the needs of our students. And so what we have here then in terms of what will the bond buy, sometimes people forget how old our buildings are because they reflect back and they remember when it was first being built. But for our middle school and high school, those buildings turned 34 years old this year. And for our Virginia Granger Elementary School, it turns 24 years old this year. And so we want to be able to continue to maintain it at the way that the public expects us to, so that we can get the most use out of it for the longest period of time. So getting back to what I was saying in terms of what were the bond buy. In our first time in April when we ran it, we asked for two elementary classrooms. And then during that time, after that, we were able to receive from the state a $400,000 grant to help build those two classrooms. And so the district was willing to spend $100,000 out of its reserve to make it $500,000 so that we could make that possible. And those specs, the specifications for those two classrooms are getting real close to being bid out. But what we really needed was four classrooms, but we pared it down to two. And so we still have two classrooms on this bond levy, and because we know that if we have the classrooms, the state says that they will pay for the additional teachers as long as the classrooms are for K through 3 in order to lower the teacher-student ratio. So we got two classrooms there at the elementary at VG, which would be built there, of course. And then we have one middle school, high school, alternative school classroom that we want to build. We already own a lot right across or adjacent to the middle school. And we flatten it, and it's all ready to go, and now we can go ahead and build there. And so that's where this classroom would be. And it would be for middle school and high school students, not just middle school alone. And it would house all three of our alternative schools in one classroom like that. It would be about 40 by 30, 1,200 square feet. And what we found out is that things, Brian, that you've always known, not everybody learns the same way at the same time in the same method. Mm-hmm. And so to make allowance for that, we have alternative schools. And right now we run about 100 students in those alternative schools, and they come from about 10 to 11 different school districts. They come on their own. We don't transport them. And the state pays for it 100%. But we have, last year, we were very happy to have, these were kids that were dropping out of school or suspended or expelled from school. Almost 70% graduated last year. We were extremely pleased about that. They're going on, some are going on to community college, some are going on to trade schools, et cetera. And so we're just really happy. about that. And these kids, they need this kind of help. Now, we found out that in the seventh and eighth grade, if we don't get them early, later on, sometimes the trends have already been developed, that bad habits, and we lose them.
There's a great book. It's called Our Last Best Chance, or Our Last Best Shot, and it's directed mainly at middle school. That's our last best chance, shot, is to get those students is at middle school. Once they get into high school, then those habits are already, for the most part, they're already instilled. Yeah,
great. And so what we found out, too, is the obvious, is that if you take even just one student in a regular classroom who doesn't want to be there and is acting up, not only is that one student not learning, but it affects the rest of the class, and it affects the teacher, the instruction, the quality, et cetera. So if we can pull those kids out and put them to a different classroom, you know, and with a different way of teaching and things like that, then it helps everybody all the way around. So we feel really excited about that, and we feel it's important.
I know you have a lot of information to get through in a short period of time. One quick question. You mentioned that there you have three middle school, three alternative schools that will be housed in this one building.
Yes.
So now where are these middle school, where are these alternative schools at now?
Okay, we have one called the Outreach. That's our biggest one, and that's on the main streets, on 2nd Street here in Okanagan. And then we, what I call it an alternative school, is our, we run the one that's in OMAC WorkSource.
Okay.
And we run that one. And then also, then this one here would be just for 7th and 8th, and that would be the third alternative school.
Okay.
But we also, by law, run the detention school up at the juvenile hall there. And so we run that also.
So now we're talking other, I mean, obviously, speaking of logistics, it's nice to have everybody in one site.
Yes.
But what about monetarily speaking? Is that good? Is it a savings to have this?
Yes, it is, because, for example, downtown we pay X amount of dollars per month for rent and utilities and things like that.
Okay.
So that would really help us not having to do that.
Okay.
So financially that would be a good thing. And like I said, the state pays for this, so it's not costing the local tax dollars any dollars on that one. Another item is that we're looking at buildings only right now, the remodeling of the bathrooms at middle school and high school. A lot of those parts now are simply, they don't make them anymore. It's a problem.
And that does happen,
Yeah, it does. So we got to keep up on top of that. We want to replace the waste basins also at the elementary school. We want to replace the main entry doors at the middle school and high school. Those frames and everything is no longer being used, or it's not operational like it needs to be, that's
okay.
For sure.
All right.
And replace our telephone intercom system at the elementary. That is about as old a one as you're going to find around here. And sometimes parents will call in and they'll make connections, and sometimes they won't. And sometimes, especially like on the intercoms, trying to get a teacher inside the classroom because we've got a message from a parent, their child should be dropped off at point A instead of point B. A lot of times the intercoms now doesn't work too. So we would like to replace that. And also, to improve the acoustics at the elementary, what we have between the gym and the music room is just this thin wall. And because of that, it's really hard to teach music when you got balls bouncing on the other side. Now, again, this is at the elementary. So we want to do something about that. And also the stage area at the high school, at the middle school, we want to do some acoustics there, because right now it gets really loud on concert nights, but also like during lunchtime and things like that, it gets really loud. So we can do some, you know, not expensive things, but some things to help that out. We want to purchase and install security cameras. Now, we have 32 security cameras at the middle school and high school.
Mm-hmm.
And we only want to add about 5 more there, because we still got some dead spots there. But at the elementary, we have absolutely no cameras, no security to speak of. And so we want to install that and make that kind of like what we have at the middle school and high school. And not only for that intruder, but we found out there are so many benefits in terms of the discipline that, you know, we can catch kids doing things that they shouldn't be, and it's not one person's word against the other. And also then students can report to the principal's office if they're being harassed or whatever. Yeah. They don't have to use their name. We can bring in that student that is, you know, doing that. And it's right there on the screen, and their parents see it too. Mm-hmm. And so it has probably helped to reduce bullying more than anything else we've done, to tell you the truth. So that was kind of a side benefit. We didn't know about that, but it's huge. And now, of course, excuse me, in our buses, we have cameras too, and the sound system, and it works the same way.
Yeah. I know the bus drivers really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take students long to notice. If there's five dead zones, they're going to know where those five dead zones are at.
They're right.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll figure that out pretty quickly. So, yeah.
So we'd sure like to have that. Another thing is we want to put in emergency buttons throughout the three buildings in certain locations. So when we do have an intruder, we can have a silent alarm like banks use. Mm-hmm. I think they still use now. We want to do that in our buildings, like I said, at certain locations. Okay. And so it goes right up to the police station. That's the other thing, too, in terms of what we have at the middle school, high school. We have the capability of sending them live footage if we did have an intruder up to the police station so that they would know what they're confronting with even before they come down.
Okay. Yeah.
Another thing that we would like to have that this bond levy would pay for is inside and outside lockdown devices for our doors, all of our doors mm-hmm. at the three buildings. That right now, at the elementary, for example, you have to go outside. If you have an intruder, you'd have to go outside, lock the door of your classroom, and then come inside. And, of course, that defeats everything if you have to go outside. And so they got simple devices now that you can hook onto doors that would take care of that, and everything's locked from the inside in an emergency situation. So we want to do that to all of our doors. Another one is your grounds, and that is we have some fencing to do, some for safety's sake, and some that just simply needs replacing. And so we would like to do that. Outside fire protection, we found out we got a lot of trees, bushes, and things like that we want to replace. And then we have we would like to install playground safety measures at the elementary. The playground, some of the equipment, some of the ground beneath the equipment needs to be replaced in order to make that safer. So we'd like to have that. In terms of the sports PE fields, and this is a big one, the people say, or I've heard anyway from some folks, that number one, we spend way too much on sports. But when you look at the facts are this, is that we spend less than 4% of the general fund budget on all of our sports combined, less than 4%. And people forget that. And that's partly because of my fault, because I probably didn't get that word out like I should have. The other thing to remember about sports is that people feel that, well, they see it all the time in the press, they hear it on the radio and things like that. And the last few years, Okanagan has been, you know, winning more than usual. We were in the 2B, and even at 1A now we're winning quite a bit. And you see it a lot in the newspapers, but you know, and they should, you know, they work very hard. The coaches do, the players do, the parents are very supportive, but there's a lot of other things going on too that is not as newsworthy. And maybe that's why it doesn't get the attention that it should. You know, like for 7 years in a row, we were the champions for our art at the Washington State art contest, which is open from the smallest high school to the largest high school. Things like that is not there because it just doesn't grab you like it does in sports. So, you know, I just wanted people to know that we do other things, and I think we do them fairly good. So, but that sometimes it's just hard to get out. Mm-hmm. What on the sports thing, we hope to have a new grass football field with a sprinkler system. We would like to install a 6-lane rubberized track with a shot put, discus, javelin, long jump, triple jump, high jump, and pole vault pads with that. And I'd like to say, right, the last bond levy in April, it was also to expand the footprint of the high school. And in order to cut back, we did away with that. And so we are not expanding the footprint. We're not buying up more property. We're going to keep it within the boundaries of what we have right now. Mm-hmm. And so that's why come we are going with a 6-lane rubberized track instead of an 8-lane, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted to make that, make sure that the people understand that. We are going to have to install new field lighting, with an LED field lighting. So it will be brighter, it will cost less. There will be 4 metal poles instead of our 8 wooden poles. Those poles are approximately 42 years old. And not as old as our present football field, which is 62 years old, but anyway, still pretty old though for light poles up there. We want to increase our bleacher seats, by another 360 seats. We have a lot of people that, park cars out there, and they're not going to be able to do that because we're going to go clear out, to where our property is in order to make the 6-lane rubberized track work. Well, when we do that, we're going to be taking out those temporary, portable, seats and moving them over to the same side as Okanagan sits on, which, by the way, will be the same day as all CTL high school fields where they all sit on the same side.
Right.
So we want to do that. Also, we want to make it more handicap accessible.
Sure.
In terms of the tennis courts, we would like to resurface the tennis courts. We have, Brian, we have 1,723 feet of cracks in our tennis courts.
Yeah.
And some of those cracks are real small. Some of them are big enough that when the ball hits it just right, it will change
they disrupt the game. Yes, they can, yeah.
So we would like to take care of that very much. And also we'd like to construct a press box and purchase a scoreboard.
Okay.
So that's it for the main part there. The other thing is, you know, in terms of the bond levy facts, so what you see on the ballot is a bond levy of $3,975,828. That's what you'll actually see. And you won't see the tax rate, and you never do on any levies, although when you pass it in your proposal, you have to say what the tax rate is. And that's because your tax rate changes from 1 week almost to the next. And so especially when you're running a bond levy like this one out 20 years, there's no way you can predict the tax rate. For example, our technology levy, it says it's 98 cents, but by the time it actually came out to start collecting it, it was 93 cents a thousand. So that changes. But it gives the taxpayer an estimate.
Sure.
And that's the purpose of it. And so we expect that 93 cents to be there instead of $1.35. Senior citizens, again, who make $40,000 or less, so they boosted it up from $35,000 to $40,000, may qualify for a full or partial exemption from this levy. And the assessor's office is the place to call on that. And the taxpayers who itemize their deductions on their federal income tax may also qualify for a property tax exemption up to 35%. And the other thing is that you can still register to vote if you haven't yet for this election. Ballots will be mailed right around January 31st, close to that. And I think I think that pretty well covers it.
Okay.
That was
a lot of information in a short period of time. So I know if they have questions, they can probably give the school district a call at 422-3629 to get more information. I really appreciate the fact that the school listened when the voters came back the last time and took the time and the effort to go out and find out why. What do we need to change? Do differently, and then respond in kind, so that the people out there, the stakeholders, as you call, the taxpayers, the district members, feel they've been listened to and they've been heard, and so now you've pared it down and hopefully present a bond levy that is more palpable to the taxpayers and the voters.
Yeah, and you know, we sent out three pamphlets so far.
Yeah.
And we're going to be advertising here on the radio and in the newspapers and stuff. So because you still need 40% of the people to vote who voted in the last general election, and our last general election was a big election.
Right.
So we need a total of 878 people to vote just to validate it. So if I get 60%, if the district does, but not the 878, it still won't pass. So people still have to vote.
Well, I think it might be advantageous to come back on here again, and we can do a little more talking and get a little more in depth about the various elements of this bond levy. And you know, I told you before we came on the air that I was going to ask a question that. Because I don't like to blindside. I'm here to help you guys get your information out. You sort of answered the question, because one of the rumors I'd been hearing was that as far as the DG and the classrooms, that, and I think this is the information that has been, you know, skewed, was that there was already grant money and already, the state was going to give you some money, and also a grant had been applied for and it had been approved to fund those two classrooms. But then I find out, okay, in talking to you, it's not just those two, it's two more classrooms. So we're not talking about the same things here with those two classrooms. Two are being funded, but you still need two more, plus the alternative school.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right, Ryan. And we need those extra two in order to lower the teacher-student ratio. And then, like I said, once they're built, the state is saying we won't give money for these additional classrooms. But if you build them at the local level, then the state will pay for the teachers to operate. You know.
Yeah.
For
kind of a Field of Dreams things. If you build it, we will come.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, for me, the personal thing here. The increase you talked about, the press box. I would be happy to help with that press box if you have a little part set aside for the radio broadcaster with an analog phone line hooked in there as well. I'd be happy to help with that.
Yeah, yeah,
okay, that's okay. Anything else you want to cover? We got about 4 minutes left.
I think, like you just said so well. In the fact that, you know, when it did fail, and people wanted that artificial turf, you know, so that was a hard one for those people that wanted it so much that now we're not going to get that. We're going to get a new football field, but it's going to be sod. And the board is hoping that we don't lose those folks because of that. Because, you know, there are a lot of different types of levies that you can run.
Mm-hmm.
But the best levy of all is the one, for the kids anyway, the best levy of all is the one that passes.
Right.
And we tried the other way, and we didn't get there, and we don't think it went down solely because of that, but it was one of the factors. That's what we kept hearing.
It was a huge factor, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we had to back off on that and settle for the sawgrass, and we'll be very, very happy to have that. But, I at the same time, I realized some people that was a hard...
Well, that was, and then expanding the footprint. Of the play of the fields and bringing the soccer field. That was another big sticking point, because it seemed like it was sports heavy and not so much academic.
Yeah.
Or student, student-led, general population, as it were.
And I think because of that, Brian, people saw us as selling, you know, that it was more of a sports levy than a security safety levy.
Right, yeah.
And so I think we put to rest quite a bit.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And that's how we were able to, one of the ways we were able to bring it down $2.5 million is by not expanding that.
Okay.
So.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I certainly appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah, I look forward to visit with you again maybe before the election.
Absolutely.
Okay.